If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
What's really interesting, I don't know if you saw this in the Tribune in the last week or two, the Second City Improv, there are teachers that teach people communication skills, and they do this for CEOs all over, and now they're using it to teach police officers. So I wanted to get on a person who is very knowledgeable about this, Kelly Leonard. He began his Second City career about 37 years ago. He is the executive vice president. He's produced hundreds of original reviews for Stephen Colbert, Tina Fey, Seth Meyers, Amy Poehler. His book, Yes And, received rave reviews in Vanity Fair. He co-leads a new partnership with Booth School at the University of Chicago that studies behavioral science through the lens of improv. And he's a regular guest on the John Williams Show. And he is Roy Leonard's son, who graced our airwaves here for over 30 years. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
I really appreciate it. So for people who don't know what Second City does outside of the stage, tell us about this Second City training program and who can benefit from it.
Sure. So we taught classes at Second City going way back, but the training center itself got formalized in the mid-80s. And first, we were really just looking to train actors, right? So there was maybe 100 students to start. Now, fast forward to right now, and there are tens of thousands of people studying at the Second City during the year. We still have the professional program to train people to get on our stage and hopefully get a shot at Saturday Night Live. But frankly, most of the people who are taking classes at Second City are there for other reasons, whether it's to be more agile in their work or to, you know, be better on a date or be a better parent or a spouse. So the Second City Training Center has been doing this for some time, and we have a corporate division, Second City Works, which is kind of what my book was about, and that's where, as you mentioned, we go out to businesses. And then we do find ourselves in some sort of unusual circumstances, and that started recently, not that long ago. It was just last year when we had a message on the mailbox from a guy from the FBI, a retired agent who is now teaching at the FBI National Academy. And he had listened to the pod. He'd read my book. He'd listened to the podcast. I talk a lot about improv and the art of negotiation, and he had a hunch that it might be cool and useful for the National Academy students, so these are all senior law enforcement, to get a taste of this stuff. So we passed a background check, three of us, and we went to Quantico. And that was amazing. And we actually started by watching the classes, which were unbelievable. I mean, these are people who've been undercover for 20 years overseas, now talking and teaching these classes. There was hostage negotiation classes, media classes. And what was amazing in talking to the law enforcement is these are people who would not spare a second to run into a dangerous situation. But when the thought of getting up in front of, like, media or, you know, constituents to talk to them terrified them. So they were already teaching some of this sort of media training skills. But then we started using our technique of improvisation. And it went over really, really well.
Let's back up a little bit, because I do want to get into the police aspect of this. But if you could bullet point for us, what are some of the skill sets? Like, I do know that I had several friends who are trial lawyers who took this course, and they could not say enough about it, because in our business, you know, you always are listening. You have to listen to what the witness is saying. You have to be reading the jury and the judge. You have to be thinking of your next question. You have to be thinking six questions ahead of time. You have to be thinking about your closing argument at the end of the day. And there's a lot going on in your head, and you still have to be a good communicator throughout that process. Tell us, what kind of skills does Second City refine, hone, or harvest? I just, you know, if, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. Well, listening, of course, listening is hugely important, but there's a lot of aspects to listening. So here's the very first thing. When you take a beginning class in improvisation, the one thing we're working up on up top is getting you out of your fear brain, your shame brain, getting you out of judgment of self or judgment of others. The scientists call it self-regulation, but it's just about, like, get out of your head, get out of your nerves. You're not going to improvise well. You're not going to be creative if you are freaking out. And we all do this in different domains, right? So, as I said, like, some people are totally fine hopping on TV and talking, and other people, like, I don't like to cross bridges. That's my thing. Everyone's got their So, yeah. So now everyone knows. So we teach in the class just the skill, and sometimes it's kind of like my meditation. Sometimes it's just a lot of breathing exercises. And the thing is, when you do it enough, and you practice what it means to sort of be in that sort of space with someone else and not be in your head, you get better at it. And so listening skills, agility, resilience, these are all things that you learn through improvisation. We've got a bunch of great phrases that sort of speak to this, and one of them is we all fail so many times, and in improv, we learn to make mistakes work for you. See obstacles as gifts. Sometimes these mistakes can be actual opportunities.
Can you give us an example of something that would be a mistake that would be that advantage?
So let's say you're at the show at Second City, and you see two actors on stage, and they've identified themselves as Bob and Mary, and the guy playing Bob accidentally calls her Jane. A lot of people would say, hey, that's actually not my name, but you can't do that in improv, right? The no doesn't work. You have to yes and. And so, like, at that point, then the person would say, yes, and you discovered my real identity. And it turns something that was a mistake into an opportunity. Audience loves it because everyone knows what's going on except for the one person who forgot the name. So that's something that happens all the time. The way that we actually, the very first exercise that we led at the FBA National Academy was an exercise called Take That Back. And we basically said, here's what you do. You're going to get into trios, and two people are going to pick person A, person B, and you're going to have a conversation. And person C, occasionally you're going to clap your hands, and whenever you do that, whatever the last thing that one of the people said, they have to take it back and replace it with another word or another phrase. And sometimes you can clap multiple times. And so they start doing this exercise, and immediately after they were done, we hadn't even started our debrief when the most alpha guy in the group, and we'd seen him earlier in the week, so we knew about this dude, but he raised his hand and he goes, like, I completely get this. You're having us practice the pivot. We get in these situations as law enforcement. We don't know what's going on. We just got a call that there's an altercation, there's a problem. And you get there and, you know, the bad guy could be the good guy and the good guy could be the bad guy. And so what you're doing when you're doing this take that back is really forcing us to quickly adapt in the moment. And it's a little bit like, you know, I think you go to a professional baseball game, and before the game starts, they're playing catch. And they're not just doing that for fun. They're warming up. But for many of us, this is true in your field. It's certainly true in the business part of my field. There's very little warming up. So if your job involves talking to people and listening to people, how are you working out those skills before you get into the game or you get into the court or the boardroom? And so just practicing the stuff is new for a lot of these people. So that's a couple of the ways that this stuff works.
And how, when you talked about getting out of your head and the fear and the shame,
yeah.
You know, and you're so right, because I can talk on the radio and television, but, like, my thing is parallel parking. Like, if I have to parallel park, I get the cold sweats to the point where, like, I have to go home and change. And it would be easier for me to pick the car up and put it in the spot. Seriously.
I know.
So how do you take somebody in this? Look, we're going to be talking generally. I want my listeners to get some go-to points, but we are going to get back to the police. But what about people who are just afraid? They have to give a presentation in their job, yeah, or they have to go and talk to somebody, you know, for a raise, or there's something that's makes them very nervous. I mean, is it about planning out what you're going to say? Is it about releasing your anxieties? Is it about thinking about possible pivots that you're going to need to make? What goes on in your mindset to prepare yourself for these, quote, stressful activities?
You're not planning what to say, but you are planning how to be. So you got to find your thing. For some people, it's box breaths or deep breaths. For other people, it's a walk around the block. Whatever you need to do to lower your nervous system is really what you're doing. And one of the things about improv, because it's embodied practice, you're moving, you're talking, you're doing, you're all that. It's a little bit like that kind of mental and psychological workout. So you're in a class, this always happens, you're in a class for 3 hours, you're making eye contact, you're listening to your partner, they're responding to you, you come out of that class and it's like you're a new person. You know, you just like it in the same way you go to the gym and you have that kind of workout. I always say that improv is yoga for your social skills. It really, really tunes you up in order to be fully present in the moment. Because for improvisers, you know, the thing that we teach our people is your partner on stage, their only job is to save you and your job is to save them. And when you know that and you just forget about what happened before, you don't worry about what's in the future, you just focus on that person across from you in the moment, it's very powerful. It creates great comedy, but also creates really great moments. I always say, you know, in life, meaning is made in moments. And so if you can really, you know, be mindful in the moment with every conversation you're having with someone, that is a better way to live. It makes people more successful. And I think we all meet those people, right? You know, that we're sort of astounded about how they can focus on every person they talk to like they're the only one in the room. I will guarantee you that's a practice skill. That doesn't just happen naturally.
And we have 1 minute before break, and we're going to come back and yes. continue this. But how much should you be thinking about your audience? Meaning, you know, hey, who are the people that I'm talking to out there in the, yep. whether it's you're in a police situation where you come upon a crime scene and you have to know who the people are, or is it something that you're doing without regard for how it's being received by your, quote, audience?
You are always thinking of your audience because your audience is your other scene partner. So you've got that person who's across from you that you're doing a scene with. But, you know, at Second City, if it's not funny, if they're not laughing, it's not working. You're not going to come back and pay for a ticket. So the audience is hugely important. And what you want to do is always know what room you're in and be able to pivot based on that room. And we do, you know, we've had to do this at Second City for years because we have touring companies that tour across the country. And it's not uncommon for that group to go from a gig in downtown Detroit to, you know, a gig in Georgia at a community center to, you know, a gig in an opera house to, you know, a church. It's just, you know, so we're constantly having to adapt for the audience that's in front of us because we want to be successful for that audience.
That's
the same thing in all these different environments we're talking about.
We're talking to Kelly Leonard. He is the executive vice president at Second City. We're talking about the training that Second City does. And when we come back, we're going to focus a little bit more on this training that Second City gave to police leaders and FBI people and how that's going to improve policing by using a very, very, very interesting technique. Kelly Leonard, who is the executive vice president of Second City, and we're talking a little bit about the improv teaching and instruction that Second City gives. Let's just be really curious, of all the people that you've yeah. seen come through Second City, you know, maybe before your time, during your time, who were the really talented people that you think were just absolutely brilliant?
Oh, there are so many. I mean, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler were astounding from day one. Amy probably more clearly because, you know, as she was, Tina really wasn't an actor, so to speak, at the beginning. I think she's become a really, really good one. She always had that writer's brain. Colbert. I mean, Colbert was my wife's roommate at Northwestern.
Oh.
and he was my first, one of my first hires at Second City and in my first cast. So, you know, just being able to have someone who's your friend also be so super talented and really just, you know, rise and rise and rise through the works. And then there's the people that maybe are not household names. TJ Jagodowski and Peter Gross are these two incredible improvisers. You probably don't know their names, but they are the Sonic guys, the two guys in the Sonic commercials
yeah.
who were in the car for years.
Yes.
Yeah. So those are very successful Second City people. Pete wrote for Seth Meyers' show, and TJ is a legendary improviser, along with David Pasquese, who's a terrific local Chicago actor and Second City alum. So, yeah, I've been very blessed. I mean, I got there in 88. My first gig was as a dishwasher. I got hired the same week that Jon Favreau got hired as a dishwasher, the film director. And then I started producing in 92. And just, you know, the 90s were an incredible time for talent in Chicago. But that continues you know, today. There's a guy named Evan Mills who just stepped off the Second City main stage about a year ago, who I am absolutely sure will be a household name in the next 5 years.
Wow. Let's go back to the training that you do, and you do this for companies and the like. This is a little bit off topic, but you know, I find that some of the younger people these days are just not as good at interpersonal skills, and I don't know if it's because they were raised with not talking to people on the telephone, not walking into someone's office and addressing them one on one. They rather text, and then secondly, they're email. So they're not as, do you find that the young people really need these kinds of skills more than anyone?
I have very mixed feelings on this. I just wrote an article for Forbes about this, where I posit that the whole idea of generations is actually, that there's big generational differences is not very true. There are certainly things that have happened with regard to COVID, and smartphones and social media, that, have a disadvantage to, you know, the sort of Gen Z generation. That being said, I'm married to a college professor, and, you know, she certainly has seen a change in her students. I think they're all capable of it, and I think that weird combination of the different things we just talked about, along with things like helicopter parenting, probably didn't help in delayed development. What I experienced every single day at Second City, because we have summer camps going on right now, so there's like 10-year-old kids in there, and there's, you know, teenagers. That when they start doing the work, they get good, and they learn how to have conversations, and they're just as good as anyone else is. I just think it's too easy now to not have the conversation. I mean, literally at this point, you don't have to leave the house, and you can get all the things that you need sent to you, and you can do your job from the house. And in that case, where are any of these people working out their muscles? So, yes, we get brought into tons of corporations to address this sort of generational crisis. But to me, it's just a human crisis. You know, people who aren't going out during the week and talking to other people, guess what? They're going to be bad at talking to people. So, you know, that's it's really not that hard of a fix, I guess is what I'm saying.
Let's go back to why I had you on the show in the first place, which is teaching police leaders and people at Quantico. So specifically, what are the areas that you addressed with the people who are in police leadership? Are we talking about coming on a crime scene and talking to the community? Is it talking about talking to the press?
Yes.
Is it talking about dealing with your officers next to you and how to co-police or all of the above?
Yeah, so, you know, we started out with this work at the FBI, and we actually have also started working with the University of Chicago Crime Lab, and it's a very similar, it's senior law enforcement. And in addition to the listening stuff that we talked about, one of the big areas that they have us cover is storytelling. So as theater artists, we you know, the telling stories is our business. And what we've discovered over time is that, people respond to stories much more so than they respond to facts and figures. So we'll do exercises. There's a storytelling exercise we do called 60-30-10 that I love. So we pick one person, you're in pairs, and we say, in 60 seconds, you're going to speak to an accomplishment of yours, something that made you proud that you did. It doesn't have to be like a huge thing. It could be, you know, a nice thing you did for your kid, whatever. You do it for 60 seconds. And then when they're done, we ask the person who's across from them, we say, okay, now you're going to repeat back to them what they just told you, but you're going to do it in 30 seconds. So the first thing that happens there is, was this person really listening? And then when they have to do the shorter version, are they getting to, you know, the right point? And then we go back to the original person, we say, okay, now you're going to tell your story, but you're going to do it in 10 seconds. So what we're doing, there's a lot of different things. You know, certainly there's listening skills. There's also, like, what's the important information that I need to get across, sometimes very quickly? You know, and what is the information that I don't need to include in these conversations? I did a workshop once in Washington, D.C., and someone was there from the White House, and they said, oh, that sort of 60-30-10 is how you need to address the president in the Oval. You have to be prepared for your long version, your middle version, or your short version. So that's some of the stuff that we cover in the class.
Interesting. And then does it also have to do with, I don't know if I saw this on the website somewhere, but there was a talk about police officers and how one of the police officers would say, "I have your back." And that was like, can you tell that story? I forgot where I heard it, but I just thought it was very compelling.
So this is a long time tradition at Second City, basically since 1959 when we opened our doors. And so before the actors go on stage every single night, the cast touches each other's back and says, "I got your back." We started doing that before our corporate workshops. We started doing that before other kinds of training sessions. It's just, and then we started, the leadership team at Second City does it before they go into like an important meeting. Right? It's a sales meeting, something like that. And when we talked about that with the officers, a bunch of them have installed that practice back in their units. Just as a way to remind everyone there, it's a symbol, right? But it's important because it's sort of like, oh no, this is my team. So much of our work is about ensemble, and that's a total Chicago thing, right? The Chicago theater community basically kind of invented this idea of ensemble. It's something that started at Second City, but you see it at Looking Glass and Steppenwolf and a bunch of the other theaters. So it's groups of people who come together to do this work, and there's all kinds of rules around that work, but they're all about how we take care of each other. And that's something that immediately resonated with the police officers, because they've got to do this, they do, you know, they're doing God's work, and it's not easy, and they face a lot of scrutiny. So just the idea that they could get into a space and an improvisation, this is what it's about, where basically everything you do is right. You know, when you're improvising, everything you do is right, and you've got each other's backs. And that sort of supportive, pro-social environment really spoke to the officers. And it was something I didn't know. You know, I went into this thing sort of thinking, like, oh, these guys are good. And they were, you know, a bit suspect about the improv guys.
I would imagine.
Yeah, there was a moment. And we tried to cut that with humor. You know, and I'm name-dropping like crazy all the people I hired. And I don't know that ever even works with this crowd. But 20 minutes in, when they're playing and they're doing the work and they're laughing and they're getting it, it's a different ballgame. And then by the time we're having these breaks, they're coming up and they're asking more questions and they're like, "Hey, would you guys ever come, you know, do this for us?" And for, cause they're, the programs, both the University of Chicago and the FBI National Academy, are all individual officers from different units, across the country. So we're getting calls right now about, you know, heading down to places like Nashville to start to work with, whole departments. And it's just nice to see this kind of, alternative, interesting training that they're taking seriously, and we know it works. I mean, we built a multi-million-dollar business doing it for corporations. It's great to be able to help, you know, our law enforcement.
Absolutely, and to even have them focus on the idea that it's important is right, amazing, right? To even focus on those skills. So, talk about Second City. We have to say goodbye, but I know you're going to come back and talk to us again. And I know you talk to John Williams once a month at least. How would people take a training course at Second City, or let's just say they have a company that might want to bring some people out to get them trained? How would they contact Second City?
Hop on the website, secondcity.com. All our information is on there for classes and the corporate stuff and then the shows. And we're a phone call or an email away. We're 24/7. We're never closed. And it's nice, you know, having worked there for so long, that 65 years in, it's like, this stuff is still working. That's great for me because I still have a job, but also I think great for everyone because we could all use a laugh these days.
That is so true. Kelly Leonard, thank you so much for joining us, and I'm sure you'll be back again.